Blog Talk Radio. my head, I hear music. I love those Jacksons. Don't you so agree? Once again, thank you for joining the Care to Read Room. You've got your Omega 7 here, live, coming to you from Miraville, Indiana. And you also have your advisor, the one you need. And the one you want is the advocate. So we'd like to thank you for lending us your airways this evening. We would like to borrow your world for approximately 60 minutes, and we'll give it back to you if you'll just come along with us on this journey. As you know, we've been venturing up on a journey entitled Health Education. We've been covering topics such as transcendental meditation, conscious-based education, looking at Maharishi's curriculum that has been designed for conscious-based education, along with the transcendental meditation. He has a complete package. And as you know, we always look to our right and to our left, and we look for the nod from our ancestors and from our elders to see if we have the okay to go ahead. Now, before I go ahead and speak, I want their permission to initiate me. And, Terrell, would you please come and purify me, please? Will you pour the water over my hand and purify me? Thank you very much. Before I could go on with this ritual, and as I told you, I was going to slow things down a bit so that we could do our complete ritual and give you an opportunity to participate, because we know our listening audience, we are in the process of training many who are not familiar with the African traditions and would like to go along and follow along and implement these things in their very own household. And we'd like for you to do just that. And if you would just pause with me for a station identification while I go get cleaned up to present this ritual to you. Pause for 1 minute. Thank you. Now, as I get things prepared, I want to make sure that the room is set. In the future, we will have more instruments that will accommodate me in this procedure. However, we are compensating now, and know that we're compensating. And what you hear behind you is soft music, not necessarily the djembe drums, which we would like to be there. In the meantime, now that I am purified and I am ready to go on with the ritual, I've gotten a nod from my ancestors from the right and my elders from the left, and they have said, go ahead on, ashe. And remember that word ashe is the word that we use to acknowledge, so let it be, so let it be done. We would like to start off by calling out our ancestors' names. And as we call their names out, if you're in the audience, if you can help us along by saying ashe, and I'm going to let my listening audience participate to help me. Good evening, and how are you doing this evening?
Hello.
Listening audience, are you there? Yes, we are doing
yes.
The ritual now. If you could help us out by saying Ashe as we call on those ancestors, I certainly would appreciate it. We have Mrs. Geraldine Sims in the audience, and she will participate with us by saying Ashe as I call out each one of the ancestors' names who have gone on before us. Zora Neil Hurston, Ashe. Carter G. Woodson, Ashe. The Honorable Elijah Muhammad, Ashe. Malcolm X, Ashe. Dr. Carruthers, Ashe. And we'd like to call out the B-1 bomber, Ashe, the boxer. If we have any names that we have not mentioned in the audience, those names are unknown to us, those names that are people who are on their way, who are not yet born, we'd like to acknowledge them as well. Now I'd like to stop and call on my ancestors' names, my personal ancestors, my lineage, my mother, my father, Clara Jenkins, Ashe, Robert Jenkins, Ashe, Marvin Jenkins, Ashe, Robert Jenkins, Ashe, Mary Lou Hawkins, Ashe, Tommy Pete Harvey, Ashe, George Lilly, Ashe, Sam Lilly, Ashe. And I'd like to also call on my particular deities at this moment, Yamenja, Obatala, and these are the heads, the mother's head that we wear on our head for the Owi, and for the father, the Babalo, that we wear on our head. And as we say Ashe, we're mindful of the fact that good character and good conduct is very important for the African. And as we read yesterday, that character was married to good conduct in order for the Africans to see that above all things, Iwapelu is always in good order. And we talked about the 10 representative of the specific traits of the character. And those character traits, once again, are chastity, hospitality, unselfishness, kindness, truth, and reciprocity, respectfulness, 6, for the elders, 7, do not become wicked, 8, do not steal, 9, do not break oath, 10, do not be hypocritical. Now, these are what the Africans believe, ladies and gentlemen. Our ancestors, they had traditions and rituals and rites of passage that they made sure on a regular basis that they exercised. And I am cautioning you to exercise these rituals on a day-to-day basis by pouring libations. And as I pour libations, you may even join me at home. I pour libations to all four cardinal directions of the wind, to the west, to the east, to the south, and to the north. And I call on my deities, Obatala, Yamenja, and ask them to be present here today, to lend their ashe. I ask them to empower me with the melanin of my ancestors that has been left behind, so that I might tap into that powerful melanin technical substance that we are now finding out is the missing link for intelligence and to prevent diseases and to keep us healthy. I ask that they leave a bit of their spirit behind so that we can tap into that spirit and that we may be empowered and that we may stand on their shoulders, not because of who we are, but because of the work that they've done prior to us coming into existence. And we thank you, ancestors, that you've always made a way for us. We thank you, elders, that you continue to make a way for us. Let us understand that it is in order to have good character and good conduct. And what we'll be speaking on today will be relevant because we're looking to lay the foundations for children for good character and good conduct. You need not get on your knees and ask the Creator for anything. If you have aught in your heart against any man or woman, and if you fail to treat a woman right, you need not bother to get on your knees. Because in your good book, you'll find, oh, it says that you need not ask God for anything in the book of Matthew if you have aught against your brother or sister. Now let us go and forgive and be quickly to do that. And let us be mindful of the fact that rituals are necessarily in order. And Africans must always remember to have rituals in their life. They must always remember to be a part of tradition. And we not only have a heritage, but we have a tradition. We have a tradition, ladies and gentlemen. May I also say that I thank the ancestors for allowing us to stand on their shoulders and to crawl out front. Now, as we proceed on with our procession here today, as the Africans, we always think of the village, and we have been told that the village is what strengthens the child. I'd like to make correction for myself and my philosophy. It is not just the village that raises the child, but I say in order to have a village, you must raise up a parent. And that is what we are attempting to do in this room, is to raise a parent with good conduct and good character. The children cannot go astray if the parents are set on having good character and good conduct. What our children see us do is what they do. And we cannot be standing strong and doing the right thing and they be going off in a different direction. It is important, if we want our true freedom and we want to be free in this world, we must give up the attachment to material things, and we must find our way to look inwardly for the spiritual man that we are looking for and the Godhead, not some God, some spook God that's coming from the sky, not somebody that's coming from the elements, but within. I will implore you today, on a day-to-day basis, seek out your ancestors, seek out your elders, and pay them homage, that they are the greatest thing that you will ever have as a role model. And we say, Ashe, Ashe, so let it be done, so let it be. We thank you for participating in that ritual with us. And we like to stop, and we like to say that our listening audience is here, our guest is here. We like to thank our guests for joining us today and being a part of this particular segment. We have Ms. Geraldine Simmons in the audience, Ms. Geraldine Sims. And we are going to call on our co-host to introduce her, and we will talk to her in a second. Mr. Sims, we're going to bring you right on in the air. I'm going to bring the music down so that we can bring you on and introduce you. But just pause with me for a second here.
By the author Sherelle Omiika Garth. A scar is sexism, classism, ageism, and racism. A scar is isms that hold us back, creating a deficiency and a lack. A scar is visible, but mostly unseen to the eyes of the average human being. They deter us from reaching our dreams. A scar can come in different sexes, and sometimes they can appear in the heterosexuals. A scar comes in classes. They come to suppress and even try to undermine the masses. A scar can come in all ages, and sometimes they don't develop to their full stages. A scar comes in all faces. They can show up in unfamiliar places, and you can even find them hiding amongst the races.
I want you to really study that poem, ladies and gentlemen. That was written from the heart. And we look at racism every day in our communities, in our homes, and now even in our churches and our workplace. And we have to deal with racism, and we must know that it can come in many different disguises. Nevertheless, we are going to eradicate hatred and bitterness on this earth through developing good character and good conduct. And that is why we asked Mrs. Sims to come along to feature her three books in reference to character building. Mrs. Sims and I work together on many programs dealing with the Choice Program up under Polly Williams in Milwaukee, Wisconsin. And she comes more than prepared to write manuals, books, curriculums on character building. She is a senior and elder, one of our outstanding elders in the community that is still out there writing and collaborating her efforts to put together curriculum on good character and good conduct. And three of her books that she has written is Amanda's Poor Self-Image. And as you know, children do become poor in their spirit, but it's up to the parents to help encourage them. She's also written Granny Shows the Power of the Mind, meaning that the child can then tap into who they really are, the true self. Then Granny talks about the hidden senses. Now, she has a special going on her books this month where you can actually go out to her website up under www.awarenessofcharacter.com and find her books there. They're on sale, and I understand you can get those books now for $10 each. You definitely want to purchase those books for your children and for your household. Now, we're going to, without any further ado, ask the sister to come on, Geraldine, to talk about what inspired her to get involved with character building. But first of all, let me tell you what our subject is today here in this room. As you know, we always have a subject matter. Our subject matter is improving academic achievement, preventing the treatment of stress, anxiety, depression, and learning disability. And we're going to go very heavy on the learning disability just to lay a foundation for you before we go into disability and special education law. And hopefully Mrs. Sims will be able to give us some input on things that can be done for children with disabilities or challenged behaviors who need to build better character. Now, I'm going to bring Mrs. Sims on, and Mrs. Sims, if you would tell us a little bit about who you are, where you obtain your training, when you first start writing, and what subject you to write about character building, and how has it helped your community in writing about that topic, and have you seen that the district has implemented your materials and made a difference in the community? Mrs. Sims, you have the air. You're in the air.
First, I would like to thank the Creator for this great opportunity to share with the audience on the knowledge that I have been blessed with on building character, building a self-image, and also working with children with disabilities. And I would also like to thank, and I'm grateful for Cheryl to invite me to speak with you today. And Cheryl was talking about me, but she has a wealth of knowledge to be shared, and I really respect her and hold her in high esteem. So what I really would like to do is to try and help parents to understand how to rear their children and so that they can develop good character by giving them love. We must give love and show love and demonstrate love to our children by giving them hugs, giving them kisses, and the things that they really need, not that so much of the things that they want, because when we give a child everything that they want, the child loses the appreciation for things that they need, and they also lose the respect for the parents. So we want to be able to really demonstrate love by showing this love and telling the child that I love you and you're beautiful, and that also helps build their esteem. It builds their character, because when you tell someone you love them and they're beautiful and they're smart, they're intelligent, then the spirit comes out and it shows in their face, and they're happier. But when we use negative words to more or less discipline our children, well, we really are destroying their esteem and their self-image. And the child, when the child has a good self-image, well, that image is seen and shown inside of that child's mind's eye. When you tell a child, I'm beautiful, he or she feels that inside. But when you say the opposite, you say you're ugly, you're lazy, you're this, you're that, then the child, the feeling, the emotion just drops. And that creates a low self-image of that child. And our image tells a lot about us. That image we have of ourselves, it determines what our life would be like now and in the future. Think about this. If a child is having is in an environment where he's shown love and shown respect, and it develops his intelligence, it has the ability to think, it has more the ability to reason and to be able to use common sense. But on the other hand, if we put the child down by calling him ugly names, then the child feels this loneliness, they feel like insecure, like he or she cannot do anything. And believe me, your child will not function in life and will not be successful if we down the child by calling him ugly names. And as far as character, being honest, being fair, having integrity. Well, if we had a society today that was the majority of the people were honest and they had self-respect, they had self-discipline, we would have a wonderful world. So that is the kind of program that we want to develop, is excellent in character. because the human being has all these inequalities within him or her. They're there. But we as parents must help our children to bring them out and see them at an early age. And as they develop, then the child will grow into excellent character.
Now, Ms. Sims, I have a question. In preventing and in developing some type of preventative mechanism, how would you treat that low self-esteem so that it wouldn't go into depression and anxiety? What would be something you would recommend?
Well, what I would do, I would always say something good, positive to the person. I would try to make that person feel like he or she's wanted. The child or the person must have a sense of belonging. I would take that person in my home, or I would take that person out for dinner, and I would just kind of like cuddle that person, be real nice and kind to that person. So that child, I mean that person, can feel inside that he or she is loved, and that we and feel that they are part of this environment. See, when a person doesn't feel like that, doesn't have that sense of belonging, then he or she feel left out. And that
now, Ms. Sims, do you think that some of this happens in a classroom? Have you ever witnessed a teacher breaking a child apart? And our concept is do no harm to the child. If the child does something wrong, have you ever witnessed an adult destroying that child's self-image by breaking them down? And does the way we respond in the school have anything to do with what the child is now demonstrating, the anxiety and depression, because they're feeling so bad about themselves?
Of course, definitely. So I've seen teachers actually destroy children in the classroom by telling the child, I got mine, so you got to get yours, or you're dumb, or you're stupid. I've heard teachers say these things to children. But really, that teacher that does these kind of things, she doesn't understand herself. She doesn't understand the nature of the human being. So she does not know that when she's called this child these names, that she's actually destroying this child and also destroying herself. And this child would grow up to be a parent, and this child would do the same identical thing to her children. So we must educate teachers, not all, but the majority of our teachers today are not being educated how to love and respect children. In fact, many teachers do not know how important their position is as an educator, that they are the ones that will mold and shape these minds and prepare them for society. They're not aware of that because they're not trained in the universities. Now, back in the day, in the old days, teachers was more educated. They went into the classroom, and they loved children, and they taught the children.
And, Sister Sims, that's what you and I were talking about, how the child has a core spirit, and teachers do not address their core spirit. They address first flesh and blood, but not the real, true child, the inner person. So there's some training right now that we were talking about, and that was through Rudolf Steiner, who now has a curriculum that specifically addresses the core spirit of the child. What do you know about training the child's spirit to become strong? And what have you saw when you're writing your books that you can address to help nurture that child's spirit?
Well, see, what we have done, we have wrote a curriculum that addresses the whole student, the whole child. And what you're saying, in order to change our education system, we must educate the whole person, his physical, his spiritual, his intellect, his intelligence, everything about that person. But in our society today, in the educational system, we only address the physical. We concentrate on the academics rather than the spirit, the soul. So we have to address that soul, and when this teacher's coming to the classroom, she has to come in prepared that she is educating a soul, a mind, not just a physical body. So she's there to address.
Well, what happens if she doesn't have any training whatsoever in the area of spirituality? What must the universities do?
No, we have to educate. Like I have a curriculum. We have to re-educate the teachers on how to educate the students because they don't know. That's what I was thinking when you was asking that question. Many of the teachers don't even know about their inner self. So how are they going to teach it? They're 100% physical. They
absolutely, absolutely. And that's what I was getting to, Sister Sim. A lot of them are there because they are affluent, and they figure that education goes first and not character. But character has a lot to say about us, and it goes before us, and our character should always be first. But I've seen where teachers would judge other teachers by how hard or how tough they are on children. And if you have any empathy for children, the first thing they'll tell you is you got to get tougher. You can't be nice to that child. And I've always told them that this was my technique, winning the child through kindness. And have I drawn you with love and kindness, is what the Bible says. So they had a problem because I addressed the child with respect, reverence, and love, when sometimes they became a bully, and they were the real bullies of the school, and that's how the children learn to become bullies. You know what I'm saying? They literally watch the teacher maneuver and take authority and usurp it, and they don't see in return the kindness that's coming from the teacher, which is a misnomer on administration. When they see that, they applaud it, and they encourage and reward that teacher for keeping management under control and for bullying that child, and it's wrong.
Let's see what it is. The teacher.
It's wrong. Wouldn't you say it's wrong?
Of course, because you can't get honey bees with vinegar. You have to have something sweet, something kind, something caring. So the teacher has to have this loving spirit. Now, if this teacher would go in her classroom day one, I don't care how those children are acting up, if she meets those students with kindness, go on and try and overlook their behavior. Just keep going, keep going. And always write on the board positive words, harmony, love, peace, kindness, and just say, okay, we are going to be happy today. We are kind today. And just keep saying that. I bet you anything, in 6 weeks, you will see a change in that, in those students. Because we have to react.
Oh, I know you would. I know you would, Ms. Sims. I know you would. You know why? Because they are really, really looking for a solution. They may come and say that there's no hope and become hopeless, but they're waiting for you to come up with a solution, and eventually you can win them over, and they will say, I've had the answer here all along. But they wanted to prove that they could go to hopelessness, and when you take a child that comes in with broken spirit, eventually if you don't care for that spirit and nurture it, it will go into anxiety, they'll become frustrated, and soon depressed. And then these children become candidates for antidepressants. And us teachers, we are trained to only identify those broken spirits. That child looks like he's failing to thrive. That child has a problem. Maybe I better recommend him for a referral for special ed. Then that's when the problems start. When we start recommending them for the wrong type of treatment, they go in, they're withdrawn, they're not talking. Next thing you know, they got a label on them, and they're stuck. And now they're getting drugs, and their mother doesn't realize she's just signed that child over to the hands of an institution.
Because the mother, she doesn't know anything. She doesn't have any kind of knowledge of this this stigma that they put on her children, nor the medication. She don't know that once they put the children on this Ritalin or whatever it is, then that's going to create a desire for a harder drug later on in life. And plus, it's destroying that child's thinking ability, his cells inside his body. And the mothers, they're not acquainted with that. And plus, the psychiatrist doesn't explain to the mother, because the mothers are ignorant in most cases, and they don't know because they came from a low social economic environment, and they just don't know because they have not been taught. And it's not the mother's fault.
And you're right. And they've done some experiments, Sister Simmons. They've done some experiments to show that you can even take a cat who's been frustrated, very frustrated, and you put milk and alcohol in front of them, when the cat normally would go and lap from the milk. After being frustrated for so long, and prior to this where he rejects the alcohol, upon him coming frustrated so bad, that cat reaches for the cup with the alcohol in it out of frustration.
Mm-hmm.
And
mm-hmm.
then we wonder, why are our children turning to drugs? Then we don't realize that out of frustration, they're looking for something to settle their nerves. Most of the children that are in school are running rampant with neurological disorders and they don't know how to settle their nerves. And mothers forget about that lap time where they got to hold that child and hold that child down to secure them and do it frequently enough that that child can settle his own spirit without getting in a fetal position all the time, thinking he's still in the womb. We've got some serious problems, Ms. Sims, with children coming to the classroom that are crack babies, which we know they're going to have problems mentally, and they're going to have these anxiety and depression problems. We know that. But then there are so-called normal children coming to school with the same type of symptoms, and we're overburdened in the classroom with a lot of clinical issues. And what we're finding is that everybody now has to be screened and diagnosed. And I talked to several teachers who went to work at a penal institution who were working middle school, and what they said was rather astonishing to me. They said that they discovered that a large portion of those children that they had as students in middle school who were assigned to special ed eventually ended up in a penal institution. And I don't know if it was because they couldn't read academically. It must have been something related to anxiety and frustration because they couldn't get at the root of their problem. And having a ticket with an assignment to special ed is not always a solution. Being labeled is not always a solution, I don't think. What were you going to say?
Let's ask the question, though. Why is this happening? This didn't happen 40, 50 years ago. Why is this happening now? Because the children, the parents, we have moved out of the nature in which we were created in. That to have a loving spirit, intelligent, being able to think, being able to reason, being able to have some self-discipline, being able to know what is right, what is wrong, to choose what is right. So we don't have that. So we have lost that somewhere along the line, and it's not accidental. So we as educators, we have to re-educate the parents, the teachers, and the children. So
and isn't that something overwhelming? You're absolutely right. I found myself teaching the child and the parent, and part of the time had to be broken up to work with the parents to the point where I had a second job in the communities I went and spoke to the parent. And I saw that it was necessary if you train the parent well, then the child would be eventually admitted into that village properly prepared. But we've got to really do a better job on going back, looking at our special education department, at the academic achievement, when we are just looking at academic achievement and not at the whole child. Because I've seen children that are social tap, that score extremely well, pass every test, but they are nuisance in the classroom because they're a social tap. Now, we haven't talked a lot about social taps in our school system. I just recently came to understanding of what really was going on in those social taps background. And there was a special done on sociopaths. And now you're finding that this was not a condition that was relevant to African-American children. They were very, very, they weren't recognized, they weren't identified as being sociopaths in the past. But with the crack cocaine children, there are so many different behaviors because their melanin has been damaged. But there is some research going on where they could treat those children with melanin, and melanin can be reproduced in the body so it could grow itself, and they can begin to work with those families and doing some research on melanin to help correct that damaged cell, because you got a child that is mentally off balance who you can't teach because he has an emotional problem. Then at the same time, he's suffering from the crack cocaine that shows up in his bloodstream. And most of this crack cocaine was designed, Mrs. Simmons. Crack is a binding element, and they use crack to bind to one of the elements in the body of African-American children, which is the melanin. Crack is the most binding substance, so it was almost created for the African-American one would think in the laboratory because it binds so well. And it shows up again in the bloodstream over and over and over again, so you can't shake the drug. So these children that have been, the highly intelligent children that would aspire to be intelligent, yet their melanin has been damaged by this crack cocaine, it's almost a death sentence, they would think. But I think we can overcome it with correcting the melanin.
Oh, yeah, we can. But see, what happened is that the crack cocaine was manufactured in the laboratory to be the most highly addictive drug there is. So that's why it's so difficult for once you get hooked on it, it's so difficult to break away from it. I know some years ago we went into a school, and we went there to volunteer, a couple of us ladies, we went there to volunteer. So these couple of girls, they were high, and I had never seen that before, people getting high in school. Oh, that was devastating for me. So anyway, the girls, they says, they were afraid of us because they thought we were police women. And so they found out, they said, oh, y'all don't care anything about us. So you're just here for the money. So we let them know we were not getting paid. So the principal told them that we were volunteered. Then they opened up, and they became my best friends because they felt like we loved them because we wasn't getting paid. Because, see, they were a couple.
And, you know, that's a shame. It's a shame that someone would go into the laboratory knowing that they're creating a substance that will bind to a race of people's bloodstream and give them a higher high and a lower low. And this is what I researched and found out, that these children were getting a high when they were acting out, and then when they were in their low, they were depressed and stressed out.
Right.
Now, special education didn't even know what to do for these children. Sometimes these children had to be rocked. Sometimes they had to be stroked because their emotions and neurological disorders were shot. Now, anytime somebody would go in the laboratory and take a substance like pure cocaine and take that substance and know that they can reduce the price of it by making it the cheapest substance on the market. Because during that time, right before crack and cocaine came on, there was heroin. And those that were addicted to heroin could shake it. They could get off of it. But some of those heroin's addiction people said they could not get on cocaine because that stuff was crazy, and they knew what it would do to their bodies. They couldn't shake it. So now you got these children running around here with these crack cocaine symptoms that they're going to live with for a lifetime, and it's in our communities, and we're talking about helping the children. We've got to help the parent. Academically, people who are suffering just to survive, they're not concerned about academics. Academics is a very low needs on their needs analysis list. They don't have that need to have intellectual conversations and academic when they're suffering from various different addictions in their community, and their families are getting on drugs because of frustration and stress. Now, I say this much, you know, the churches are going to have to step in because our schools need to be turned around. And it's getting to the point where there's so many charter schools and so many choice programs that they're now taking over some of the public schools. But what we have got to do is revisit the curriculum and say that we can no longer utilize a curriculum that doesn't address the whole child, because you've got too many spiritual things that are going on with the child. What do you think, Mrs. Sims, about them having an out-and-out program that will address the rites of passage?
Well, I think the rites of passage is a good program. You know, I don't know a lot about it, but that I do know about it, I know it's very helpful. It will really help the students. I do know that much.
What about the black boy? Does he need a rites of passage so he can transition into manhood? And will that help him to know what his responsibility is?
He definitely needs that. The African-American male, he definitely needs to know responsibility. And to be, because there's a force that's working against the African-American male mainly. And so he really, really needs to be re-educated to what is going on and what is happening to him. Because and he has to learn, and it's difficult for the mother to teach them, because in most cases, the father's not in the home. And that wasn't 30, 40 years ago. It was a family. So the force that invented the cocaine has also destroyed the family. So we have to get this family back together. That's where our power lies, within the family, because you have.
Well, you know, Mrs. Sims, that was one of the things that I had heard several speakers, white and black, talking about, that there is a fight for the families and to break them apart, to take those students and to disconnect them from their families and to speak
right.
into their lives so that they no longer are listening to the parent. And there's a force
right.
that has really done a good job in trying to destroy families, and all of our problems stem from inappropriate families that need to be readdressed.
But see, what happened, it was a few years ago when they said that you could not discipline your children, and they was told that the children was told that if your parents hit you, call the police. Well, that was satanic right there, taking the discipline out of the parents' hand and put it in the police hand, and because the police would pick your child up and beat your child half to death, but you couldn't hit it. So now what was that?
Mm-hmm.
So we have to
re-educate. And see, that's definitely something that needed to be looked at, because when you have to go to court to prove that a policeman is wrong for hitting your child, and yet you are the parental person who has parental right, and
right.
you not only go to court, but they can lock you up for hitting your child, mm-hmm. then we've got a serious problem. And that's why in these family courtrooms, we are going to have to appear more so often. Our children are being taken away, put into foster care, and
mm-hmm.
parents are losing parental rights. And they're losing it so fast that all they need to do is do one or two things incorrectly. They are up for making a decision if you are going to have parental rights back. And that's another thing the schools don't address a lot with these mothers. All their children are taken away, and they've created a surrogate advocate to take their children and rearrange them. And by the time they rearrange them and bring them back to the family, they're almost unfit to come back to a family because of all the deficits they create. And we have more children in special ed that are from broken homes and that are from the society where they're in foster homes. Now, as I look at the special ed list, majority of those are boys that are on that disability list,
really?
And I can't seem to come to grips with the fact that mostly all the boys are considered as being mentally off balance. And I really had a problem with it many years ago when they literally took a group of parents to court to prove that they could not test their children. They were haphazardly testing children in Illinois. And a group of parents and myself, we lobbied against them testing children sporadically, putting them in special ed. And we won that case in Illinois, and Dr. Jawan Kanjuku was there to come in and do the training of the sensitivity courses because they thought every black boy had a mental problem that they thought he was supposed to be suited for special ed. And these were intelligent families who had children who had never been in special ed, and they fought. Now, you got a lot of parents who are not educated now, and they don't realize that they don't have to give their signature over, but they give their signature over willingly and place the child in special ed and then become dissatisfied, and they bicker, but they don't bicker to the right person to get help by invoking their signature. So that's a big problem that we want to speak about, ladies and gentlemen, is the children who are locked away in special ed. Are they the next generation to go into the penal institution? Are they the children who can't read, and by choice and on purpose they were not taught to read, so they slipped through the cracks and went on down the system until they ended up in special ed, and then eventually they ended up in a penal institution because of the confusion, the anxiety, the frustration? They were actually put there to become slaves again in prison. Now, I like to speak on one thing. Black mothers, you have to really do a special job with your black boys. And I'm saying this because I have two black males of my own, and you have to make sure you're on top of things, even when they go to the hospital, if they're being diagnosed. If they go in with anxiety, you have to make sure that they're not over-medicating those children.
Right.
And when they over-medicate them, creating a condition in a child, and once they give them the medication, they can make a patient out of a child who is not mentally off balance, and they can put them away and let the government's money take care of them. You have to be very careful. That's a form of racism as well, and you have to fight it with everything you've got in you, because if they don't line your children up in the jail, they can line them up in a mental hospital, and that's another
right.
form of prison, because money is attached to that.
Oh yeah.
Now,
Mr. Smith,
can you tell us anything about the special ed department and what you've seen?
I want to say this one thing, please, ma'am. Now, when these babies, especially African-American babies, when these babies are being born, the father, grandmother, whoever, they have to really be careful and do not let that doctor take that child, that baby, away and examine it. You do not know what that doctor is doing to that baby, because we cannot trust.
Are you there? Are you there? Hello? Are you still with us? Now, let me say this. I'm going to go to a commercial break for a second and see if we're still here.
A Chief and Not an Indian, read by the author Omika Garth. Born of the Blackfoot Indian tribe, one of the real reasons why I still survive, to those with opinions who wonder why I choose to be a chief and not an Indian, for I'm tribal, you see. My destiny was soon to be foretold, of the prophecy to be unfold, of a leader to come, and a real gift, even to some, raised around the circle of the tree of life, with a dream catcher used as a device. This is why I choose to be a chief and not an Indian. It was a vision of a leader to come, and a real gift, even to some, with a child at the center of the family's link. This was one of the tools used to keep a leader in sync. Raised in a tribe of 18, with 8 chiefs and 10 Indians, and if you're wondering where the 8th chief arrived, it's no real surprise, for I'm the real leader of the pack, with all 10 Indians who got my back. This is why I choose to be a chief, and not an Indian. It was a vision of a leader to come, and a real gift even to some. Why, Mama made her transition when I was just 2. There was nothing left for me to do but to lead my people into the underground steeple. Why, one of the traits of a real chief is to take charge against those who would barge. By consulting the oracles for spiritual instructions in order to avoid chaos and disruption. Like gods and goddesses, they do this. Like kings and queens, they do too. Like priests and priestesses, they all do it too. Cast lots to determine their spots. This is why I choose to be a chief and not an Indian. It was a vision of a leader to come and a real gift even to some. You see, a chief know their place, so back up and get out of my space. Don't try playing me for no Indian, acting like you're smoking on the peace pipe of indigo. I'm calling you out like a real chief. I aim to take back what was mine, you thief. Oh, and if you're still wondering why I choose to be a chief and not an Indian, just check the history books. Why, it's no real mystery. For centuries, you have desecrated our land, forfeited God's plan for man, called us out of our name, left us feeling shame, stole our language, then pushed us into anguish, attempted to render us mute. That's when we had to hit you with a suit. Took us to a level of deprivation, which led us to call for reparation. You stole from a chief, you dirty thief. Now I'm going to leave you in your grief.
Yes, ladies and gentlemen, we'd like to welcome you back. You're in the Care to Read room, and that number here is 646-478-0270. We have a listener in the audience with a question.
We got cut off.
Hello, how are you?
We got cut off.
Oh, okay, I see you got that. I noticed that you were gone, and I said, now that is strange. Now, let me recapture, ladies and gentlemen, what Mrs. Sims was saying. We have to be very careful with our children, especially our male child, and we have to make sure that we are understanding that the child is not being examined for the wrong reasons, and we don't want any substance put in their bodies. We don't want them monitored in any way. And when they go to prison or jails, we don't want them locked up for false information and falsehood just be very careful when your child is even taken down to the station. Are they guilty? Were their rights violated? Did anybody do something incorrectly to them? You go behind your young brothers and sisters and tell them you're going to check it out. And
right.
if you have to write a character statement for your children, you do that. Because in the penal institution, they have your children. And at that point, it's another form of slavery. Young people don't know their rights. And they do have rights as inmates, as special ed students. And you have to exercise those rights under what any circumstances. Go to your ancestors. Ask your ancestors to give you direction. Ask them what you should do. Because they're going to give you the best source. I tried to tell someone that earlier that our ancestors is our solution for finding sanctuary because we need protection. And when you go in these schools, you need protection. When you go in the penal institution, you need protection. When you go in the courtroom, you need protection. And don't think that you don't. You call on those ancestors, and they will come. I know they will come. And they are going to come for me every time I call them. If any of my children are in trouble, they are going to come. And they're going to see the shine of glory come forward because they have shown up so many times, Mrs. Sim, for me and for others because I have a great connection with the legal system. And the legal system sometimes accuse me of coming in with the army, and they look at me and say, where are these people coming from? And these are ancestors. And I want to let you have a few words and a minute because we're coming up on our 60 seconds. What I'd like to say is that, mothers, be careful. Your black boys are the new bald eagle. You cannot let them go into the jailhouses and pay their own bill and get bills that are too high, and then you standing in front of the courtroom trying to mortgage your house to get them out. We've got to have better penal systems set up between the black people in their community with our elders and our chief to help us figure out how to handle the situation because we don't want all of our black men locked up, and we
right.
certainly don't want all of our children put in special ed, and that's not going to happen. And as we call on our ancestors, they will give us a solution for the end time. I promise you they will. And Mrs. Sims, can you give us any input or recommendation for how to improve the academics of the children? Because they're certainly not learning while they're fighting for their life.
Well, the academic, really, we have to have balance because if we just feel...
Now, we only have about 10 seconds here.
Give
us a recommendation.
Have the children, the good quiet, and meditate. Go within and tell them their power lies with inside of them. That's the only thing I can think of within 10 seconds, that the power lies within them, and they must have love and respect for self first.
Well, we're going to play that success story as we go out. And we know that there is a solution, there is a way. And we're going to find that way, Miss Sam, because our children cannot all be locked away, cannot be all be destroyed. Now listen to the words of this song, ladies and gentlemen. We are living in a different world. Thank you so much, Miss Sam, for being a part of our show. Thank you for giving us your input today. We appreciate you and love you. Stay on, Miss Sam. Don't go off.
Time is now for all to see that it's up to you and it's up to me. The walls that divide us are the longing to come down. This is our chance to rise above and stand on common ground. You are my brother.
You are my sister.
We are one family.
One family.
Yeah.
Oh, I have a dream. You have a dream. To have the
Academic achievement and preventing the treatment of stress and anxiety and learning disability in our children. But we've got to get behind our children as good teachers, and we've got to have EYPELU, good character and good conduct ourselves. And we need to go and find ourselves and meditate on the word so we can become endowed with spirituality so we can pass it on to our children. And what we are experiencing, Lord knows, it is not the normal for children to be hurt in any manner, for people to be taken back to the level of going into a Holocaust movement of prison systems. We know that that is not the way the Creator had it planned, and this thing that we know about the first will be last and the last shall be first, we know that this system was coming to an end, and it will have to release those men from prison. They will have to release those children from special ed. And everything that can be indicted is now being indicted. And everything and every turned stone that's crooked and every road that is not straight will have to line up with what the Word of God says. There are gods on this earth now, and they're rising up. And remember, I told you that I was truly one of them. You must believe that you're one of them and one of the gods that's been called, because we're rising up and indicting everything that is not right. We will not be molested. We will not be harmed. Our ancestors will protect us and give us sanctuary. And there will not be any harm laid on our children and our lineage. If there is, if we're drawn out as a threat, and if there is, woe unto your extensions of your family and your children's children down to the thousand generation. We are told that we're blessed. Blessed. Blessed coming in and blessed going out. And that our lineage is blessed, even in the loins, because we've paid tithes with Melchizedek. And this is in the scriptures, and you can back me up on that. Because if you are living righteous and teaching your children to live righteous, you can live free and out of harm of being molested for speaking the truth. And those that would bring harm against those innocent people who are talking about things that need to be done, I want to set the record straight. That you don't mess with an ancestral child. I think I've said that several times. And when children are being messed with, when children are being neglected and exposed to crack cocaine and their lives are being devastated, and AIDS is being rampant throughout the schools and throughout Africa, there must be a chastisement, ladies and gentlemen. And I think I read about the chastisement must come. Let it come. And if the civil war must come, let it come too. But chastisement must be upon a people who have done wrong and desecrated the land, violated the land, hurt the people, and segregated God's people. Yes, we are God's people. The black people have been called to do a special job. We are the ancestors. We are the elderly. We are reincarnated. We've been here before. And we are the special chosen people that God has called to be the elders of the generation. We will not be harmed. Our children will not be harmed. We will not be bullied. And we will not allow our children to be susceptible to any hurt, harm, or danger. So mothers, watch after your male child. Watch after them. Seek after them. I don't care how grown they get. Go to the courthouse with them. Go to the jailhouse with them. Fight for them with all your might. And when you've done all you can do to stand, remain standing. And again I say stand. And the winds will come. And they will blow up against you. And when they do, remain standing. And when you've done all you can do to stand, the ancestors will stand with you. And on that note, I want to say thank you. Thank you, Mrs. Geraldine Sim, for coming and help make it possible so we can figure out what we need to improve our academic achievement. Thank you, Mrs. Sim, for being bold enough to say the things that you say, because I know God is pleased with you if no one else is. And I want to wish you well with your writing as an author and your books. Once again, if you can give us that website and tell us a little bit about how to find that book so you can get your marketing advertising out there. You're in the air, Mrs. Sims. Ms. Sims? I don't know if Ms. Sims could hear me, but I'd like to say thank you very much, Mrs. Sims, from by my heart for being a part of this segment. And I'd like to say to the listening audience, please tune in tomorrow. We are on a journey talking about how we can improve the academic achievement in preventing treatment, stress, anxiety, depression, and learning disability in these classes. Mothers, make sure your diagnoses are right, that your children are receiving. You can medicate a child and create a patient. And we don't want children made into patients. We don't want adults made into patients. We don't want, some medicine that you give a person that's melanin enriched that is receiving psychiatric treatment can be the wrong medicine and hurt the child. Some medicine cannot even be effective that you give a melanite enriched child. So you have to be very careful if you're giving a child that's so-called a mental patient any forms of medicine that might hurt the melanin. You have to be very careful that you get behind this thing and stay involved. And mothers, don't be an absentee parent. Get involved and get in those schools. And if the labels have been placed falsely on the child, work to get them out. Get an advocate to work for you and self-advocate to cut the bureaucracy for yourself and show your child how to advocate for himself. As a national advocate, I can show you better than I can tell you how to advocate for yourself and your children. Be an advocate, mother. I tell you that I don't profess to be but two things, and that is an advisor to help my sisters get through their education and get their degree for non-traditional education in early childhood, and as an advisor, because you have to learn how to advocate and be an ombudsman, a go-between person to help your family and your children. And on that note, I want to say thank you very much for being a part of this segment. Please join us tomorrow, same time at 6 o'clock. Here in this room, we are urging you to come and be a part of this discussion. Hot topic this week, ladies and gentlemen. We've got some great people coming in this room this week, this Friday. A lady from her organization, please come in and join us. Tomorrow we're going to have Earl speaking with us about correcting the problems in the school system. What can we do? Can we fire all the teachers? No. We must help the teachers, and we must help the parents. And you can do it. I know we can. Together we can do it. We can see the change that we want to see in the world by coming together and stamping out racism and stamping out injustice and partiality. We can do this together, ladies and gentlemen. We are all one nation under a groove. And right now, I'm going to get out of here, and you have a great day, O'Double.